On board the Enterprise's shuttlecraft, McCoy runs a hand scanner over an attractive woman in a blue headscarf and green jacket.
We have reached projected point 3, Captain. Adjust to new course 201 Mark 15.
Thank you, Mr. Spock.
Kirk turns round in the pilot's seat. The woman sighs, pours a cup of water, and hands it to McCoy, who offers it to his captain.
Jim? How is she now? No change.
Small thanks to the Starfleet.
Now, really, Commissioner, you can't blame the Starfleet.
I should have received the proper inoculations ahead of time.
Sekiro's disease is extremely rare. The chances of anyone contracting it are literally billions to one.
I was sent to Epsilon Canaris 3 to prevent a war, Doctor. Thanks to the inefficiency of the medical branch of the Starfleet, I've been forced to leave before my job was done.
Commissioner, I can assure you that once we reach the Enterprise with its medical facilities, we'll have you back to your job in time for you to prevent that war.
How soon will we rendezvous with that ship of yours, Captain?
In exactly 4 hours, 21 minutes, Commissioner.
He flashes her a perfunctory smile and turns back to the controls. She glances around icily.
Captain.
Yeah?
Will you check your automatic scanner, please?
Kirk pulls his spherical-shaped scanner screen a little closer.
That's odd. I've never seen anything like that before.
Nor have I.
Kirk lowers the protective shield that covers the forward-facing window. Ahead is a hazy, twinkling object that changes color from pinky orange to blue.
Heading directly toward us at warp speed.
Kirk alters course. The object remains in the center of the window.
Staying right with us. Sensor readings, Mr. Spock.
Vaguely like a cloud of ionized hydrogen, but with strong, erratic electrical impulse.
The shuttlecraft begins to rock and jolt.
We've got it.
Helm does not answer, Captain.
Neither do the pods. Communications are dead. Building overload. Cut all power relays.
Cut, Captain.
The craft enters the glowing cloud.
Captain, what's happening? I demand to know.
You already know as much as we do, Miss Hedford. Whatever that thing is outside, it's yanked us off course from the Enterprise.
Now on course 98, Mark 12, heading directly toward Gamma Canaris region.
Jim, we've got to get Miss Hedford back to the Enterprise. Her condition.
I know, Bones, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Then I insist you make your scheduled rendezvous with the Enterprise.
Miss Hedford, we'll do what we can when we can. At the moment, we're helpless. You might as well sit back and enjoy the ride. Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. Metamorphosis, written by Gene L. Kuhn, directed by Ralph Senensky. The shuttle has landed in a rocky cavern.
Enterprise, this is the Galileo. Come in, please. Come in. Enterprise, this is the Galileo. Come in, please.
No good. We're not transmitting. Bones?
Oxygen, nitrogen, atmosphere, some krypton, argon, neon, temperature 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Practically identical to Earth atmosphere.
Spock.
Gravity is similar to Earth. Most unusual in view of its size, the bulk of the body seems to be iron and nickel. More than an asteroid, like a small planetoid, I should say, possibly a remnant from a planet breakup. Totally suitable for human life.
All right, we get out and get under. Issue phasers. Bones, maintain full alert. Commissioner, if you'll stay inside.
Just how long am I supposed to stay inside, Captain?
That's a very good question. I wish I could answer it. All right, let's go.
A door opens in the side of the Galileo, and Kirk leaps out, followed by Spock and McCoy, all with phasers ready. Ahead of them is the low mouth of the cavern.
Take a look around, Bones.
McCoy goes towards the cave mouth. Kirk and Spock go to the back of the boxy craft and open the access panels.
Most unusual. Unlikely. In fact, Captain, I would say quite impossible.
Nothing wrong, and nothing works.
Precisely.
There must be a reason.
Obviously.
Let's look a little further.
McCoy comes back. The commissioner stands in the doorway and looks out.
Jim, I just took a tricorder sweep, and I got the exact same readings almost as Spock got when we were pulled off course.
The ionized cloud?
I think so. Only it reads here on the surface with us. It's off in that direction. And it doesn't read solid. It's more unstable, tenuous, like a collection of gases.
Hello!
A figure runs towards the cavern entrance.
Fascinating.
Bones, get a physiological reading on that, whatever it is.
The man, dressed in orange overalls, bounds up and stands before them. He's in the prime of life, with brown hair and bright blue eyes.
Are you real? I mean, I'm not imagining you, am I?
We're real enough.
You speak English? Earth people?
From the Federation.
Well, it doesn't matter. I'm Cochrane. I've been marooned here who knows how long. Well, if you only knew how good it is to see you. And a woman. Beautiful one at that.
I'm Captain James T. Kirk, commanding the Starship Enterprise. This is my first officer, Mr. Spock.
You're a Vulcan, aren't you?
Correct.
Chief Surgeon Leonard McCoy.
Doctor?
Pleasure.
Oh, and excuse me. Assistant Federation Commissioner Hedford.
Ma'am?
She nods coolly.
Food to a starving man.
She looks away.
All of you.
He runs over to the shuttle and examines it.
Hey, that's a nice ship.
McCoy scans him.
That's simple and clean. Been trying to get her to go again?
Kirk nods.
Oh, forget it. It won't work.
He's human, Jim. Everything checks out perfectly.
Mr. Cochrane.
He comes back. Kirk takes a step towards him.
We were forced off our course and taken here by some force we couldn't identify.
Which seems to be on the surface of his body at the moment.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that.
You say we'll be unable to get the ship to function again?
Not a chance. There's some sort of damping field down here. Power systems don't work. Take my word for it.
You don't mind if we continue to try?
Go right ahead. You've got plenty of time.
What about you, Cochrane? How did you get here?
Marooned, I told you. Look, we'll have lots of time to learn about each other. I have a small place over that way. All the comforts of home. I can even offer you a hot bath.
How perceptive of you to notice that I needed one.
If you don't mind, Mr. Cochrane, I'd like a little more than just a statement that you were marooned here. It's a long way off the beaten path.
That's right. That's why I'm so glad to see you. Look, I'll tell you everything you want to know, but not here. Well, your ship is sure a beauty.
Yes, she is. And you've been out of circulation quite a while. The principles may be new to you. Mr. Spock. Why don't you explain our methods of propulsion to Mr. Cochrane?
Spock takes Cochrane round to the back of the shuttle, and Kirk and McCoy move to the side of the vessel, out of sight.
Talks a lot, but he doesn't say much.
Mm. I've noticed something else.
What's that?
He looks familiar.
Familiar? Now that you mention it, he does.
I can't quite place him, but... What about Miss Hedford?
No temperature yet. But we've got to get underway soon, Jim. I guarantee you it will develop. What are we gonna do?
Kirk shrugs.
Take Cochrane up on his offer.
You built this, Mr. Cochrane?
Yes, I had tools and supplies left over from my crash.
Not bad. Not Earth, of course, but it's livable.
I grow vegetables in the fields over that next ridge. Come on in.
The building is a small octagonal structure, like the upper floor of a lighthouse. As she reaches the door, Nancy falters. McCoy puts out an arm to steady her.
All the comforts of home indeed, Mr. Cochran.
Kirk picks up an electronic gadget.
Where'd you get the antiques?
What, you mean my instruments? Well, I imagine things have changed a lot since I crashed.
Not that much.
He hands it to Spock.
Must you keep it so terribly hot in here?
Well, the temperature is a constant 72 degrees. Let me get you something cool to drink.
Do you feel hot?
I feel infuriated, deeply put upon, and absolutely outraged.
Well, it was quite a hike here. You're tired. Just take it easy for a while.
I'll rest later, Doctor.
McCoy moves over to Kirk.
Temperature, Captain. First sign.
Yes, I know. It means we're running out of time.
Captain. Doctor.
They join Spock at the door. Outside, in the clearing beside the house, a hazy shape has appeared. It's pinky-orange, but twinkles with splashes of blue, dirty yellow and green, like the force field that brought them to the planetoid, but smaller, only 9 or 10 feet tall. It vanishes.
What was that?
Well, sometimes the light plays tricks on you. You'd be surprised what I've imagined I've seen around here sometimes.
We imagined nothing, Mr. Cochran. There was an entity out there. And I suspect it was the same entity which brought us here. Please explain.
There's nothing to explain.
Thank you.
You'll find I have a very low tolerance level where the safety of my people are concerned. We find you out here where no human has any business being. We were virtually hijacked in space and brought here. Now, I'm not just requesting an explanation, mister. I'm demanding one.
All right.
He pours drinks.
It was the companion.
The what?
Well, that's what I call it. As a matter of fact, Captain, I didn't crash here. I was brought here in my disabled ship. I was almost dead. The companion saved my life.
You were injured?
I was dying, Mr. Spock.
You seem perfectly all right now. What was the matter?
I was an old man.
You were what?
Well, I don't know how it did it, but the companion rejuvenated me. Made me young again, like I am now.
Spock raises a quizzical eyebrow.
I prefer to reserve judgment on that part of your story, sir. Meanwhile, would you please explain exactly what this companion of yours is?
I told you, I don't know what it is. It exists, it lives, and I can communicate with it.
That's a pretty far-out story.
Mr. Cochran, do you have a first name?
Zephram.
Zephram Cochran? Of Alpha Centauri? The discoverer of the space warp?
That's right, Captain.
But that's impossible. Zephram Cochran died 150 years ago.
Cochran looks round calmly at their shocked faces. Kirk, McCoy, and Spock gaze at Cochran. Nancy looks unwell.
The name of Zephram Cochran is revered throughout the known galaxy. Planets were named after him. Great universities, cities.
Isn't your story a little improbable, Mr. Cochran?
No, it's true. I was 87 years old when I came here.
You say this companion found you and rejuvenated you? What were you doing in space at the age of 87?
I was tired, Captain. I was going to die, and I wanted to die in space, that's all.
True, his body was never found.
You're looking at it, Mr. Spock.
If so, you wear your age very well.
How do you feel?
Terrible. How should I feel?
Well, you're running a low temperature. Perhaps you should lie down.
Doctor, will you please just leave me alone? It's the heat.
McCoy turns away, troubled.
All right. Try to relax. Jump. It started, the fever. It's over 100 and it's climbing.
How long do we have?
Matter of hours, that's all.
Kirk nods. He looks at Cochran and begins pacing the room.
Mr. Cochran, you say you were brought here 150 years ago. You don't look a day over 35.
I haven't aged. The companion sees to that.
Captain, these instruments, they date from the time indicated.
From your ship, Mr. Cochran?
I cannibalized it. The food, water, gardens, everything else I need, the companion gives me. Apparently creates it out of the native elements.
You say you can't communicate with it. Perhaps you can find out what we're doing here.
Cochrane looks uncomfortable.
I already know.
You wouldn't mind telling us.
You won't like it.
I already don't like it.
He glares, waiting. Cochrane's face is bland and expressionless.
You're here to keep me company.
You mean you brought us here?
No, the companion did. I told it I'd die of loneliness. I thought it would release me. Instead, it brought you here.
No! 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 Oh, it's disgusting! We're not animals!
Kirk and McCoy lead the hysterical woman to another room and lay her down on a bed.
Oh, no, it's inhuman! No! No!
McCoy sedates her. In the main room, Cochrane sits down impassively. Spock scrutinizes him.
Spock, run additional tricorder readings. Learn anything you can. Find me a weapon to use against this thing.
You ask me to find a weapon. Do you intend to destroy it?
I intend to do whatever is necessary to get us off this planet and Commissioner Hedford to the hospital. If the companion stands in the way, then we push it out of the way. Clear, Spock?
Quite clear, Captain.
Very well, you have your orders.
Spock goes. Kirk turns to Cochrane, who sits staring straight ahead and won't meet his eye.
Mr. Cochrane, if you left here, what would happen to you?
I'd begin to age again, normally.
You want to leave here?
Believe me, Captain, immortality consists largely of boredom.
His eyes shine.
What's it like out there, in the galaxy?
We're on 1,000 planets and spreading out.
Kirk paces the room.
We cross fantastic distances, and everything's alive, Cochrane. Life everywhere, we estimate. There are millions of planets with intelligent life. We haven't begun to map them. Interesting?
How would you like to go to sleep for 150 years and wake up in a new world?
It's all out there waiting for you. But we'll need your help to get away.
You've got it.
Kirk's brown eyes glitter. At the cavern, Spock is working at the back of the shuttlecraft. The companion materializes behind him. It's vaguely conical, like a Christmas tree, and taller than the Vulcan. Spock turns round and sees it. He stretches out his hand. It passes into the body of the creature. Spock is thrown to the ground. The access hatch bursts into flames. At the house, Cochrane and McCoy look in on Nancy.
You seem to think this companion of yours can do almost anything.
I said it was very powerful.
Could it cure her?
I don't know.
How do you communicate with it?
It's on a non-verbal level, but I usually get my message across.
We've got to try. We're helpless. See if it can do something.
Cochrane glances down at Nancy, tossing beneath a blanket, her eyes closed. He goes. McCoy gets up from Nancy's side, and he and Kirk follow Cochrane to the outer door. Cochrane turns and looks back at them.
How do you do it?
Well, I just sort of clear my mind and it comes.
Cochrane strides over towards one of the strange, alien-looking trees at the far side of the clearing. He glances back at Kirk and McCoy, half turns away, and stands with his arms relaxed at his side. His eyes closed. As Kirk and McCoy watch, the companion appears a short distance away and glides towards Cochrane. It envelops him, sparkling with light. Cochrane remains with his eyes closed, unharmed. Kirk looks at McCoy.
Bones, what do you make of that?
Almost a symbiosis of some kind. Sort of joining.
Exactly what I think. Not exactly like a pet owner speaking to a beloved animal, would you say?
No, it's more than that.
Agreed. More like love.
McCoy glances at his captain, then looks back at the strange union. The companion vanishes. Cochrane opens his eyes dreamily, and Kirk and McCoy go over to him.
Are you all right?
Yes, it kind of drains me a little, but I'm all right.
Well?
The companion can't do anything to help Miss Hedford.
Then she'll die.
If there's anything I could do to help, I would. And I will. But we can expect nothing from the companion.
Later, McCoy returns to the shuttle and finds Spock lying dazed on the ground.
Spock! Are you all right?
Yes. Quite all right, Doctor. A most fascinating thing happened. Apparently, the companion imparted to me a rather quaint, old-fashioned electric shock of respectable voltage.
It attacked you?
Evidently. Unquestionably, a large part of its substance is simple electricity.
A smile spreads across McCoy's face.
Oh, yes. I'm not a scientist or a physicist, Mr. Spock, but am I correct in assuming that anything that generates electricity can be shorted out?
Quite correct, Doctor. Put this in the proximity of the companion. Throw this switch, and it will scramble every electrical impulse the creature can produce. It cannot fail.
They're back at the house, studying the machine that Spock has improvised. Cochrane turns his back and steps away. Kirk gets up and follows him.
It troubles you, Cochrane?
The companion saved my life. It's taken care of me all these years. We've been very close in a way that's hard to explain. I suppose I even have a sort of affection for it.
It's also keeping you prisoner.
I don't want it killed.
We may simply render it powerless.
But you don't know. You could kill it. I won't stand for that, Kirk.
We're getting out of here, Cochrane. Face up to it. I'll do anything I have to save all of our lives.
Cochrane's gentle blue eyes look from Kirk to Spock and back again. They return his gaze implacably.
I suppose from your point of view, you're right.
We understand how you feel, Mr. Cochrane. But it has to be done.
All right. You want me to contact it?
Please. Outside.
Cochrane goes to the door, but stops with his hand on the doorpost and glances back.
What was it they used to call it? The Judas goat?
He walks swiftly out into the clearing. Spock comes up to Kirk with his machine. They follow as far as the door, and Spock sets it down on a table.
There is some risk, Captain. We do not know the extent of its powers.
Nor yet ours.
Cochrane is standing in the same spot with his eyes closed. The companion materializes. It moves towards Cochrane, enveloping him.
No.
Cochrane convulses and falls to the ground. The companion advances swiftly towards the house. It bursts past Kirk and Spock and into the room. Kirk and Spock collapse to the floor, writhing. McCoy, sitting beside Nancy, springs up. He sees Spock choking, clawing at his throat, and Kirk convulsing.
Stop it! You're killing them! Stop it, please! Stop it! You're choking them! Let them go! You're choking them!
Cochrane comes round.
Stop it!
He stands and closes his eyes. The companion, in contact with Cochrane, releases its hold on Spock and Kirk and slowly vanishes. McCoy hurries over to them.
You're all right, Jim.
Yeah.
All Spock?
Right. All right.
They get to their feet. Kirk and McCoy hurry to the door. Cochrane stands with his eyes closed, the companion enveloping him.
Cochrane got it off of us. I don't know whether he did us a favor or not.
What kind of talk is that?
How do you fight a thing like that?
Got a ship up there somewhere. The responsibility of four lives down here. One of them dying because of me.
It isn't your fault.
I'm in command, Bones. It makes it my fault. How do you fight a thing like that?
Maybe you're a soldier so often that you forget you're also trained to be a diplomat. Why not try a carrot instead of a stick?
Kirk frowns, but his eyes slowly light up and the ghost of a smile passes across his face. He steps back into the room.
Spock.
Yes, Captain.
The universal translator on the shuttlecraft. We can try that. Talk to that thing.
The translator is for use with more congruent life forms.
Adjust it. Change it. The trouble with immortality is it's boring. Adjusting the translator will give you something to do.
It is possible. If I could widen its pattern of reception.
Right down your alley, Spock. Get it here and get to work. And that thing is still out there. Better go that way.
Kirk looks down at Nancy.
Any change?
Yes. For the worse.
On board the Enterprise.
Ship's log, stardate 3219.8. Lieutenant Commander Scott recording in the absence of Captain Kirk. A shuttlecraft bearing the captain, the first officer, Chief Surgeon McCoy, and Assistant Federation Commissioner Hedford is now definitely overdue for a rendezvous with the Enterprise. We are attempting to backtrack it.
Mr. Scott. Computer Central reports that we are coming up on the coordinates of the last established position of the shuttlecraft.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
Steady. No, Mr. Scott. Bearing 310, Mark 35, just cleared. No antimatter residue.
All scanners. Spherical sweep. Range maximum. They'll have to pick it up.
If the shuttlecraft powered away, Mr. Scott. But if it were just towed?
There'd still be traces of residual matter floating around, Lieutenant.
Bearing 210, Mark 40. Strong particle concentration. We're on it, Mr. Scott.
Lay on that course. Maintain scanning.
Course laid in, sir.
Sulu looks at his instruments and frowns.
Particle density decreasing. Gone, sir. No readings.
Steady as she goes, Mr. Sulu.
Uhura comes over.
What do you think it means, Mr. Scott?
The shuttlecraft was on schedule until it was shy 5 hours of rendezvous. Then something happened.
Well, I'd feel a lot better if it were a little more definite.
It didn't wreck. There was no debris. There's no trace of expelled internal atmosphere, no residual radioactivity. Something took over. Tractor beams, maybe. Something. They dragged it away on the heading we're now on.
Well, if there are no further traces, how are we going to follow them?
We stay on this course. See what comes up.
It's a big galaxy, Mr. Scott.
He looks at her, turns back to the view screen and sighs.
Aye.
Spock is making adjustments to a small object.
What's the theory behind this device?
There are certain universal ideas and concepts common to all intelligent life. This device instantaneously compares the frequency of brainwave patterns, selects those ideas and concepts it recognizes, and then provides the necessary grammar.
Then it simply translates its findings into English.
You mean it speaks?
With the voice or the approximation of whatever the creature is on the sending end. Not 100% efficient, of course, but nothing ever is. Ready, Mr. Spock?
Quite ready, Cap.
Mr. Cochran, call the companion.
Cochran goes out to the far side of the clearing. Kirk and Spock follow and stand by the door. In his hand, Kirk holds the translation machine Spock has been adapting, a silver tube about a foot long. The companion materializes. It glides towards Cochran. His face is calm, almost serene, as the creature envelops him. Kirk steps forward, the translator in his hand.
Companion.
The creature moves away from Cochran, who opens his eyes in surprise.
We wish to talk to you.
How can we communicate? My thoughts. You are hearing them. This is interesting.
Feminine. No doubt about it, Spock.
Yes. The matter of gender could change the entire situation.
Way ahead of you.
Then it is not a zookeeper.
No. A lover. Companion.
Kirk takes a step forward, searching for words.
It is wrong to keep us here against our will.
The man needs the company of his own kind, or he will cease to exist. He felt it to me.
One of us will cease to exist if we don't get her to a place where we can care for her.
The man needs others of his species. That is why you are here. The man must continue.
Companion, try to understand. It is the nature of our species to be free, just as it is your nature to stay here. We will cease to exist in captivity.
Your bodies have stopped their peculiar degeneration. There will be nothing to harm you. You will continue, and the man will continue. This is necessary.
This is a marvelous opportunity to add to our knowledge. Ask it about its nature, its Spock, history.
This isn't a classroom. I'm trying to get us out of here.
A chance like this may never come again. It could tell us so much.
This isn't the time.
They look back towards the companion, and Kirk takes another step towards it. Behind him, the sky has darkened to a deep mauve.
Companion, what you offer us is not continuation. It is non-existence. We will cease to exist. Even the man will cease to exist.
Your impulses are illogical. This communication is useless. The man must continue. Therefore, you will continue. It is necessary.
The companion slowly fades and vanishes. His expression bitter with failure, Kirk goes back into the house. The others follow him in. At the door, Cochrane turns back pensively and looks at the clearing where the strange, glowing, amorphous creature appears. His face is troubled.
Captain, why did you build a translator with a feminine voice?
We didn't.
But I heard...
The idea of male and female are universal constants, Cochrane. There's no doubt about it. The companion is female.
I don't understand.
You don't? A blind man could see it with a cane. You're not a pet. You're not a specimen kept in a cage. You're a lover.
I'm a what?
Her attitude when she approaches you is profoundly different than when she contacts us. Her appearance is soft, gentle. Her voice is melodic, pleasing. I do not totally understand the emotion, but it obviously exists. The companion loves you.
Do you know what you're saying?
He looks back at the door.
For all these years, I've let something as alien as that crawl around inside me, into my mind, my feelings.
What are you complaining about? It kept you alive, didn't it?
That thing fed on me, used me. It's disgusting.
There's nothing disgusting about it. It's just another life form, that's all. You get used to those things.
You're as bad as it is.
Your highly emotional reaction is most illogical. Your relationship with the companion has for 150 years been emotionally satisfying, eminently practical, and totally harmless. It may indeed have been quite beneficial.
Is this what the future holds? Men who have no notion of decency or morality? Well, maybe I'm 150 years out of style, but I'm not going to be fodder for any inhuman monster.
His blue eyes flash angrily, and he marches out. Spock raises his eyebrows.
Fascinating. A totally parochial attitude.
Doctor? Doctor?
McCoy hurries to Nancy's side.
Right here, Miss Hadford.
I heard him. He was loved. And he resents it.
Just rest.
No. I don't want to die. I've been good at my job. But I've never been loved. Never. What kind of life is that? Not to be loved. Never to have shown love. And he runs away from love.
She turns her head away, her shoulders heaving. McCoy and Spock exchange a thoughtful look. On board the Enterprise, Scotty is in the captain's chair.
Ship's log, stardate 3220.3. Lieutenant Commander Scott reporting in lieu of the captain and the first officer. We are continuing our search for the missing shuttlecraft.
Sulu turns round from the helm.
Approaching what seems to be an asteroid belt, sir. Scanners report approximately 7,000 bodies of sizes running from types A to M.
Atmosphere count?
Approximately 34% of the bodies of atmosphere in types H to M.
All right, then. We do it the hard way. All sensors set for life form registration. Automatic selection.
Mr. Scott, there are thousands of them out there they could be on. If they're on any of them at all.
Why, that's right, Lieutenant. Thousands. And we'll look them over one by one.
Companion, do you love the man?
I do not understand.
Is he important to you? More important than anything? Is he as though he were a part of you?
He is part of me. The man must continue.
He will not continue. He will cease to exist. By your feeling for him, you are condemning him to an existence he will find unbearable. He will cease to exist.
He does not age. He remains forever.
You speak of his body. I speak of his spirit. Companion, inside the shelter, a female of our species is dying. She will not continue. That is what will happen to the man, unless you release all of us.
I do not understand.
Our species can only survive if we have obstacles to overcome. You take away all obstacles. Without them to strengthen us, we will weaken and die. You regard the man only as a toy. You amuse yourself with him.
You are wrong. The man is the center of all things. I care for him.
But you can't really love him. You haven't the slightest knowledge of love, the total union of two people. You are the companion, he is the man. You are two different things. You can't join. You can't love. You may keep him here forever, but you will always be separate, apart from him.
Cochrane is standing a little way away from Kirk, listening.
If I were human, there can be love.
The companion dwindles and vanishes. Kirk lowers the translator in his hand despondently and goes across to Cochrane. Spock and McCoy follow him.
What did you hope to gain by that, Jim?
Try to convince her of the hopelessness of it. Love sometimes expresses itself in sacrifice. I thought maybe if she loved him, she'd let him go.
But she, or it, is inhuman, Captain. You cannot expect her to react like a human.
I tried.
It's useless, I know.
Zephram Cochrane.
They turn. Nancy stands in the doorway, fit, well, and beautiful.
Bones?
Bones takes a scan.
I don't understand it. She's not sick at all.
We understand.
She looks at Cochrane.
It's her.
Don't you understand? It's a companion.
Holmes? He's perfectly healthy. Heart like a hammer. Respiration normal. Blood pressure normal. This is medically impossible.
We are here.
We?
Both of us. Those you knew as the commissioner and the companion. We are both here.
Companion, you do not have the power to create life.
That is for the maker of all things.
But Commissioner Hedford was dying.
That part of us was too weak to hold on. In a moment, there would have been no continuing. Now we're together.
Then you are both here, in the one body.
We are one.
She goes towards Cochrane. He takes a step back. She looks at him, hurt and surprised.
Saffron. We frighten you. We've never frightened you before.
She blinks uncertainly, and her eyes turn away, narrowing as she seeks to understand him. She turns back to him with dawning comprehension, her eyes wide.
This is loneliness. Oh, what a bitter thing. Oh, Zephram, it's so sad. How do you bear it, this loneliness?
Spock, check out the shuttlecraft. Engine, communications, everything.
That will not be necessary, Captain. Your vehicle will operate as before. So will the communications device.
You're letting us go?
We could do nothing now to stop you.
She turns her eyes on Kirk.
You said we would not know love because we were not human. Now we are human. We will know the change of the days. We will know death.
She turns back to Cochrane.
But to touch the hand of the man, nothing is as important.
You're very beautiful.
Part of me understands, part does not. But it pleases me.
I could explain many things.
Oh, let me walk, Zephram. Let me feel the earth against my feet. Let me feel the warmth of the sun on my face. You beside me. Let me feel these things.
Go ahead, Cochrane. We have a few things to do.
He smiles. The dark-haired woman looks up into Cochrane's eyes adoringly. They take hands and wander away into the alien landscape. On board the Enterprise...
Mr. Scott, it's the captain.
Put him on. Lock onto his coordinates. Captain, this is Scotty. Are you all right?
Perfectly all right. Can you get a fix on us?
The helm is computing your position now, Captain.
Course 224, Mark 12, ETA 57 minutes.
We'll be there in 57 minutes, sir.
Very good. I'll continue transmitting. Assume standard orbit when you arrive. We'll transport up in the shuttlecraft.
What happened, Captain?
Interesting story, Scotty. I can't tell you now because, quite frankly, I don't know how it's going to end. Kirk out.
Everything will be an eye-opener to you. There's 1,000 planets out there, 1,000 races. And I'll show everything to you as soon as I learn my way around again. Maybe I can make up a little for everything you've done for me.
She looks up at him, her hazel eyes full of sadness.
I can't go with you, Zephram.
Of course you can. You have to.
My life emanates from this place. If I should leave it for more than a tiny march of days, I'll cease to exist. I must return, even as you must consume matter to maintain your life.
You mean you gave up everything to be human?
She purses her lips. He squats down in front of her.
But even if you stay here, you'll eventually die.
Joy of this hour, I am pleased.
Well, I can't just fly away and leave you here.
You must be free, Zephram Cochrane.
You saved my life. You
took care of me. You loved me. I never understood.
They gaze at each other.
I do now.
A happy smile spreads across her face. Slowly, Cochran leans forward and kisses her on the lips. On board the orbiting starship.
We're locked in, Captain. Standard orbit established. Shuttlecraft Bay standing by to receive you.
Stand by, Scotty. The Enterprise is waiting, Mr. Cochran.
I can't take her away from here. If I do, she'll die. If I leave her, she'll die of loneliness. I owe everything to her. I can't leave her. I love her. Is that surprising?
Not coming from a human being. You are, after all, essentially irrational.
Think it over, Mr. Cochran. There's a whole galaxy out there waiting to honor you.
Cochran looks at Nancy.
I have honors enough.
But you will age, both of you. There will be no immortality. You'll both grow old here and finally die.
That's been happening to men and women for a long time. I've got the feeling it's one of the pleasanter things about being human. As long as you grow old together.
Are you sure?
There's plenty of water here. The climate's good for growing things. I might even try and plant a fig tree. A man's entitled to that, isn't he? It isn't gratitude, Captain. Now that I see her, touch her, I know that I love her. We'll have a lot of years together. They'll be happy ones.
Kirk nods.
All the best.
They shake hands. The three officers walk away.
Captain, don't tell them about me.
Not a word, Mr. Cochran.
Jim, what about that war on Epsilon Canaris 3?
Well, I'm sure the Federation can find another woman somewhere who'll stop that war.
Arm in arm, Cochran and Nancy watch them leave. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.